So house began as a place for inspiration, and that was, it's like 15 years ago now, maybe more. But yeah, it started as a place for inspiration, and homeowners would come to us to find ideas and then connect with builders and designers. But then as projects move from like the inspiration mode into like execution, that's where we really saw an opportunity to start like building software.
Welcome everybody to another episode of the Build Smart Blueprint. Very excited today to have Annie Slattery from Houzz. So Annie is the head of product at Houzz, and she's spearheading Houzz Pro. So many of you may know what Houzz Pro is, and we'll get into that in the conversation today. But she's really pushing Houzz to become excelling in software for builders to use. Interestingly, Annie actually started her own company, Connects, which was founded by Houzz. So I'm hoping that we can get into a little bit of that conversation as well. So welcome to the podcast, Annie.
Thanks so much, JP. Thank you.
I think it would be good. I think most people, because we're based in the UK and our Houzz is an American company, most people will probably have heard of Houzz. But could you just give the listeners a bit of a background of what Houzz is, and especially Houzz Pro, because I think a lot of people may not actually know the depth of what Houzz Pro actually does.
Yeah, absolutely. So Houzz is a leading platform for construction and design. And I know a lot of people in the UK, and I'm here based in Ireland, really know Houzz for the homeowner side, and for supporting homeowners with inspiration. But our mission is very software focused, and we're really looking at providing industry professionals across both design and construction with the best software for to build their projects, to basically manage their projects from the first lead that comes through all the way through to final payment.
Does Houzz Pro, because I have some experience in using Houzz when I used to run construction company. I was always curious whether I was seeing an interface or using an interface that was different to a designer, because a lot of the architects I used to use and work with would also use Houzz. But is it two separate things, or is it one platform for both?
No, it's very much one platform for both. There is some nuances with how, like for example, in the design experience we say proposals, in the build experience we say estimates. So there's kind of like small differences, but it's very much just there was a few years ago where there was unique features only available for design. So I don't know if that's what maybe you found, but no, now it's the same platform. But we definitely know that certain designers want certain features, and then the build segment, you know, they're very focused on takeoffs or daily logs, whereas designers love our design features like mood boards and selections. So we do try and like customize the onboarding experience and just the experience you have relative to like the goals of your project.
And did it start off as just serving designers and then moved on to builders? And also, did it start off, because I think most people really know Houzz as lead generation, because that was always kind of the big thing. You know, they've got the eyes and of the homeowner, because they're looking for them for inspiration, and then, you know, it's an easy sell to then say, well, here's a builder that can deliver that. Is that where it kind of started off as?
Yeah, that's exactly where it started. So Houzz began as a place for inspiration, and that was, it's like 15 years ago now, maybe more. But yeah, it started as a place for inspiration, and homeowners would come to us to find ideas and then connect with builders and designers. But then as projects move from like the inspiration mode into like execution, that's where we really saw an opportunity to start like building software to connect the professionals in with the homeowners. And it did initially, designers were probably a stronger user in the early days of the software. But I'd say it's very much equal now, if not even stronger with the build segment. So yeah, it's kind of been an evolution, but we're very focused on both user types, and all our features kind of serve both quite well.
And what was that initial, or I guess initial, but that shift away from just being a lead generation platform to then Because I feel like when I was using the platform, it was maybe 2017 that I remember getting kind of upsold, not from a cost point of view, but being told, oh, why don't, now you won the job, why don't you like start actually running the job on our software? And I'm just wondering, you know, that transition for you guys to start looking at that, was that as a result of your builders or your clients needing something like that? Or was it, were you finding, I don't know, people were just not converting because they didn't have the tools to then manage the jobs they were winning and things like that? What led you guys to kind of develop House Pro more towards the management side?
Yeah, I think it was very much like, you know, identifying the opportunity that here we had like all these homeowners who were, you know, they were there for inspiration. Then they were looking to connect with a pro. And we started like building software to make it easier. But it kind of quickly became apparent what a great opportunity it was and how much we could support this existing user base of contractors and designers. So it started very much more on the financial side, like preparing estimates, invoicing, purchase orders, change orders. So it was quite focused there, then evolved, you know, into the selection process. And then over, I would say, the last probably 5 years, it's really, really doubled down on the software side. Like, even now, we're building out all the AI workflows. We're getting super focused on construction contractors, you know, handling the whole job costing, like really the comprehensive job costing that they need from their, like, you know, everything from raising an estimate through to like how they're managing their budgets, their expense management. That's a really big focus for us now because we know it's like so important for builders. You know, if your job's running behind or you're losing money or, you know, you've overspent somewhere, making that really transparent and building those features, I think it's kind of been an evolution, but that's where we've taken it.
If you were to look at your user data of all the members that are using House Pro, is it skewed towards most people are heavily using this function, but less so this function? Because I know there's a challenge in construction to adapt technology. Yeah. So I'm just curious, in your experience and you know, the vast amount of data houses got, what areas are guys usually, you know, quick and more willing to use software for, and which ones are they a little bit slower to do?
Yeah, so estimating and invoicing is probably our biggest. So that, you know, from the financial tools, pros are adopting them and using them all the time. 3D is also a really popular one for pros. They're using it mostly in the sales cycle throughout, and then they're managing their projects with it as well. But that one's well adopted.
What my personal experience, and I know that I know this will resonate with many listening, is the owner, the ops manager, the office team buy in, but if you know, software implementation is only like 30% as impactful as it could be because the guys on the ground just have no interest in actually using it. So it ends up, you know, you've just got like a half used platform. And then usually what happens is, you know, the office team, you end up getting so frustrated, they just go back to just WhatsApps and, you know, pieces of paper and conversations on the phone. So curious of your experience of that and how you think, you know, that could be tackled.
Yeah, I see it as well. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, but we do try and position, say, for team members, like a great feature for team members is to download the mobile app and use daily logs and start logging what you've done on site during the day, or start, you know, generating a log at the end of the week. And then pros share that with homeowners. That's a really valuable tool for team members to use. Also, team chat. So from the office, the admin or the guys in the office, project managers can chat about specific projects. They can link in things like link in the estimate. That collaboration piece with team members is working really well. And the adoption there's not that big a barrier. You know, just download the app, log your daily logs, or download the app, check your schedule. So you can check, like, what am I assigned to today? Like, what are my tasks to do this week? So that's been quite good. But yeah, if you're going to, like, start overwhelming, like, we've got very defined personas. So they're called field crew. So they're basically the guys in the field. And the guys in the field have a subset of features that we expect. Again, there's permissions, so they're not getting access to, like, the financial side, the estimating, the invoicing. They're not seeing the margins that the business owner and the admin are managing. So I think that's kind of just making sure that we're catering to the right person and we're not overloading anybody with stuff that they don't need. Yeah.
And I know before we, when we spoke before, we were talking about the kind of contractors under the sort of small contractors under the £1 million contract value type.
Yeah.
Is it generally the profile of contractor that's served by House Pro, I believe?
Yeah, £1 million, but no, all the way up to like 20 million. So we've got big contractors on there as well, running like multiple jobs. But yeah, the million will be our sweet spot
for
the UK.
So I guess I've found that kind of size underutilizing technology the most, it seems like, also probably it's weird because they're the most agile, because there's the least number of hoops to jump. There's probably just one decision maker that could buy the software and roll it out in a week if they needed to, but also they're kind of the slowest too. So is that something that you guys have intentionally focused on, that being the market or your kind of sweet spot, or is that just where it's fallen into? That, because predominantly I think that's where house started, right? Because
yeah,
you've got homeowners, and most homeowners, when they're trying to build, their jobs are not going to cost more than £1 million usually. So you know, you inevitably had a platform of homeowners, so I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, residential is definitely our sweet spot. And if we're just looking at, like, a, you know, dealing directly with the homeowner. So the pros that are working on those type of jobs, it's always about helping them find an aha moment. And a feature like Takeoffs is, like, perfect for that. Because you think about Takeoffs, you know, the typical or the old school way was, like, printing out plans on A1, like, you know, those random size, getting your scale ruler, your highlighter, sitting down. And so many pros still do that. So I think being able to show, like, digital on-screen Takeoffs, you see in a second, okay, I don't need to go print out plans. I can measure this. I'm seeing, like, the quantities that I need. Now I can put a price beside it. I can add a wastage. And before I know it, something that took me a couple of hours, I can start getting done in, like, half an hour. So I think having those aha moments for those pros in around the million mark that's kind of been really critical to start with something simple and just really, really catch on. So I think that's been important with adopting technology. Also, the project schedule, you know, trying to keep your job on track. It's being able to communicate well with the homeowner. I think we see, like, there's certain type of pros who really care about that, and they pride themselves on, like, the professional estimate, the nice branding, the company logo, and then being able to follow through with the client dashboard where they're tracking how the project goes. And I think, again, when a client's so satisfied with both the job and how the job was ran, and then they start promoting that, it just makes it easier for, you know, pros to really decide to, like, invest time and learn in adopting more tools.
When you are because obviously you've onboarded many contractors, and I imagine you spend most of your day looking at people's usage and how to optimize it and how to get more from it. So from your experience, what does successful onboarding look like? Can you give some examples of some contractors that have, you know, really done well to implement things and actually see some value quickly?
Because
I think a lot of people get excited when they hear about the ability to do, like, digital takeoffs and all these things that you're saying, daily logs that go straight to the client and Gantt charts. Mm. But it can be quite overwhelming, especially if you're still doing it on pen and paper and things like that. So it'd be great if you could give some insight into kind of what successful case studies or what have you, you've seen?
I always think it's good to start at the start of a project. Like, you know, when people are in the middle of a project and then they're trying to like adopt a new technology in the middle, it's always hard. So I think estimates is always a good place to start. You know, you've got a new lead, whether you've won the lead on house or you've, you know, it's been referred into you. And then you start with the estimating and, or if it's, you know, if you've got plans, you know, that you do a takeoff and do the estimate. So that's always a good place to start. And it's quite like a natural progression then to, for your estimate, if you win the job, convert it into an invoice, get your payment through house. Like that's quite a simple work stream that you can bring online. And I know in the UK as well, there's some, maybe I'm not as up to speed as I should be, but there's a new law, right, that everybody has to do their filings online. So use a platform like Xero. So I think...
Making tax digital or something is called.
Making tax digital, we've actually... like chatted to the guys at Xero about like the implications of that. But I think, you know, being able to then connect in with your accounting software, you know, we're integrated with Xero and QuickBooks. So if you just move online and do a simple workflow like that and get started there, that's a great, you know, that's a great way that we've seen that pros start going, okay, this is an easier way than doing it in pen and paper. And then you start layering in, you know, you've won the job. Now you're in the management phase. Like, why don't I, you know, I can start logging daily logs or, you know, we have collaboration tools with subcontractors as well. So if builders are working with subcontractors, you know, you can start sharing the schedule with your subcontractors and that's probably more advanced in the flow that you would start collaborating with your subcontractors and your team members. But definitely, I think getting the financial piece and then also tracking that through your budget. It's not that complex if you're not, you know, even if you're not using technology, it's not overly complex to start managing that online, and it's just so much better. Less things get missed. You're able to build, like, you know, a healthier business, earlier warning signs if you're running behind. So that's kind of like a zero to one and kind of where we see pros successfully starting.
So you're saying you suggest to start from the natural flow of the project, winning the project, and then work on winning it and then through to actually how you're going to build it. How about in terms of the more specifics of like who do you usually suggest to start training on the software? You know, which leaders in the company? How early do you integrate, you know, the site team? How do you suggest you know, training the site team on it? Like, what have you found works well and what have you found doesn't work well if you were to just look, you know, over the cases of all the different types of users that you have on the platform?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have onboarding specialists at house, so people who are like, you know, day in, day out working with pros to help them get set up on the software. So I think onboarding, you definitely need somebody who's advocating for it. Like, I'll give you an example. Last week I met a big group of contractors and they were actually US based, but still it's the same situation. One guy was using the software, absolutely loved it, used everything that we had, and he was trying to sell it to his larger business stakeholders that they needed to bring it into the business. And he did the whole job. He was selling so hard, advocating, showing examples of how he used it. And then they were like saying, yeah, but what if, you know, Jimmy has this problem and blah, blah, blah. We normally do it this way. And he's like, well, this is how I've used house to solve it. So I think having somebody, you know, like an advocate and somebody take the time to learn it themselves and see how is this going to work for our business is probably always a good first step. And then say, OK, now I'm going to invite in my finance person. We have, especially in the UK, we have a large team of bookkeepers and bookkeepers who work with our software, and then they work with clients. Like, they have multiple clients who are all on house pro, like one bookkeeper might. So always good to have somebody like a bookkeeper who's familiar with the software, and then, you know, bring in the bookkeeper and now it's like, help me get set up with the financials, make sure I'm integrated with my accounting software. That's always a good piece. And then in terms of bringing on, like, as you say, bringing on the field team, you know, you could, again, get one advocate, test it with one person, see how they find downloading the app. How are they communicating on chat? Where are they finding problems? Are they able to track the schedule while they're using it online? you know, if they have problems with views, permissions, like we set default permissions based on who we think you are. So if you're signing up as a field crew, you're going to be slightly restricted in what you can see, but all that can be changed by the admin. So I think there's a bit of customization needed with how the business is run. But on the whole, I think it's probably easier to do it that way than, and as I saw, I really learned a lot on that call last week where the person who had really nutted out all the flows of the business and the nuances and figured out how it will work from them, that's the best way to do it. Because our onboarding specialists, we can talk you through everything, make sure you get well set up, make sure you understand the fundamentals. And then it's the same as everything. Then you got to start like layering it into your business, coming back with more questions, things like that.
Yeah. So one of the, I definitely, because over the last couple of years, we as a company have done some consulting to help implement different softwares into construction companies.
Okay.
And I've definitely seen the difference when you've got a champion that isn't the owner. Because everyone thinks, oh, obviously the owner wants to put software because, you know, you track your people, you're more on top of the money, makes you leaner. But, you know, when you get somebody championing it that isn't, a shareholder of the company, that's different. I also have found that when there's this kind of reoccurring crossroads when looking at software for construction, where, and especially at the sort of scale that we're talking about, these kind of smaller contractors, where there's a set process and either the process needs to change to fit the software and the way the software does it, or the software needs to be able to adapt to the current process. And it's nearly always, reverts back to, oh, the software shit. We've got to just keep doing the way we do it because, you know, it works. I'm just curious about your experience of that, because whenever we were in that conversation, because we didn't own the software, it didn't really matter to us. We were just trying to help. But you kind of sit on the side where, well, you kind of, you know, your software's not shit. You can't say that. I'm just curious, like, what, when you have that, and I'm sure you must have that.
People of course.
Saying, I think, you know, it doesn't work for my way of doing it because my way is so special and all of that.
Well, as a product person and like with my team, flexibility is key. So every time we build something, it's like, no, it can't be too rigid. Like, you know, you're building cost codes. We have to accept that everybody has, yes, there's a standard format for cost codes and there's a standard job costing process, but people use things in different ways. They want to see it different ways. So we need to be flexible. Within limits, like you have to, when you're developing products particularly, you have to know best practice. It has to work well. It has to be, you know, it has to do the job it needs to do. But I think we get it, especially with construction contractors. They've all got their own way of doing things. And so much of it is around like adapting an Excel to like suit a gazillion different purposes, or like spreadsheets, you know, how are they twisted and turned to suit them? So we do need to be flexible. But I would say another thing with House and with our product team is like we're talking to customers all the time. So we do really take on feedback and like always interested to know, okay, what way do you do it? And then we take it back to our team and say, okay, is this like a total edge case that we're never going to bill for? And then we'll be fully transparent. You know what? Like we can't do it that way. Or is this something that probably applies to a wide range of pros? Like how can we build in the flexibility to make it work from them? And I think that's how we've really grown. Like all our features, we get it quite a lot, you know, where people come back to us and go, oh my God, you listen. Oh my God, you listen. And when we hear that, we get that feedback quite a bit. And it's like, yeah, of course, we're always, always listening and always like building and iterating based on what the customers want. Because at the end of the day, everyone wants flexibility, but there's only, you know, it's not that wildly different. And if it is that wildly different, then it's probably not like, you know, we're not a good fit for what the person needs and, you know, they could find maybe a better solution.
Yeah, because I think you touched on something kind of almost in defense of software and product people like yourself that I think often builders don't understand the more flexible, tell me if I'm wrong, but the more flexible you make it, the more complex it is for the user to try and navigate the software, right? Sometimes you have some, I'm not going to say names of the softwares, but you have some where there's so many options that you then need to hire a consultant or an IT person to then implement or change it or run it or do anything. Whereas I guess you're trying to find that balance between a software that people can just use day to day, but also has some flexibility to adapt to the business needs.
That's exactly it. We definitely don't want to make it so complex that you need to hire someone to run it, because I think that defeats the whole purpose. Like, software should be simple to use. It should be easy to adopt. Yes, it takes time. I think because we have this all-in-one offering, it can be overwhelming. So that's where we do try and like compartmentalize things, like, okay, just tackle the planning phase, tackle the project management phase. We wouldn't try and build so much flexibility shouldn't mean complexity. Like, it shouldn't result in that. It should just mean that, you know, you've got two different businesses with the same end goal, but they do things differently. We should be able to kind of just manage and be able to handle that.
A lot of software companies, including yourselves, are originally from the States, right?
Yes.
And some of the terminology, some of the ways of doing things, some of the just even the construction practices, way contracts are set up and things are different. And this goes on to that kind of flexibility thing, where that's a complex problem, I think, to solve, that having lots of different basically companies. But have you found a way of solving that, or is it just, well, you just got to go where your biggest market is and everyone else has to just deal with it?
No, not at all. So we have a localization team. So in every market that we're in, we have a localization team who's very focused on that market. So we have a team in the UK who are very focused on making sure language, terminology, pricing, like everything is localized and it feels like we're a UK business. We integrate with Xero in the UK. You know, we show in our pricing catalog, we show like local pounds pricing. Like we try and make sure that we don't feel like this US company that's, we don't care that you're actually in a different region. So there is a big focus on that. There's nuances though. Like, you know, in the UK, for example, we always get requests for like dual currency, like euros and sterling. Whereas in the US, that's not a problem. Everything's in dollars, you know, maybe US dollars, Canadian dollars. But these are things that we then just need to prioritize, like, you know, VAT, all these different things. The localization team works hard on that. And
I'm curious, when you say that you are quite lean when it comes to making changes and taking feedback, do you then just update the whole software, or are you saying you are updating local kind of to the country or even individual users' accounts?
No.
How does that work?
No, never individual users' accounts. Different access, yes, but like, no, we'd never launch a feature for a specific user. But yeah, we have like house.co.uk, which is a different experience. It's a localized experience than house.com or .com.au, which would be in Australia, which is where I originally started. It's same features, different terminology, and in some cases, like tax treatment, things like that, currencies, there would be slight differences, integrations. You know, some things that we integrate within the US, like the Home Depot for suppliers, not relevant in the UK, so it doesn't translate across.
I want to move the conversation a little bit around, you know, a topic on everybody's mind, AI. You mentioned it a little bit earlier, but I'm curious about your kind of thoughts on how AI is going to impact the kind of sector of jobs under £1 million contract value. So just generally kind of domestic new builds, domestic refurbishment projects. How do you see things changing. And it would be great if you also put some timelines on things as well, you know, where you think things will be this time next year, maybe in the next 5 years. I'd love to get your thoughts.
Yeah, I think, you know, you see those memes where it's like, you know, AI is going to take your job, AI is going to eat your lunch. But the one that's always fine is the contractor, like the plumber, the builder, the electrician. I feel like a lot of times it's like, you know, the trades are quite like protected from what AI can do in terms of taking over on the building site or like, yeah. So in that sense, I think, you know, the residential market in terms of the actual building practices will carry on. I think the efficiency will really come on how you run jobs, how we've integrated AI into houses is all about increasing efficiency. So from everything from generating your first estimate, whether you're like attaching your scope of works into an estimate to then populate with pricing and, you know, generate a professional estimate with more details, with, you know, alerts, it can help you price better. Then we use AI to convert your estimate. Once you've confirmed your estimate and you're clear on it, say it's been accepted, or before that, you can convert that into a project schedule. So it's like better tracking of how your project's going. Now you can adjust it, but AI will suggest like, okay, the foundations will take 2 weeks, you know, and it will suggest timelines for each stage of your job. So it's about increasing efficiency there. We've got, you know, an AI assistant coming, which can help you like ask which projects ran over last month, which projects ran over last year, where am I losing money, where am I gaining money, you know, what team members weren't working as efficiently as possible. So just all these like really valuable insights is something that I think AI can help construction businesses of all sizes just run more efficiently. And I think a lot of it ties back to the financial piece of just making sure that you're staying ahead, you're like pricing jobs well, you're making sure to avoid cost overruns. So I think it can really only help there. And yeah,
I mean, I understand that these features that you've mentioned there are still quite early stage, right? And maybe users are not yet actually able to access them. It sounds like they're all being rolled out, but
they can.
I
was going to say a lot of them they can. Yeah, like so, AI generated estimates is there. Translating into a schedule is there, AI takeoffs is there. So there's a lot that's there and ready to go already.
So I guess my question two part. One is my guess is that it's mainly at early adopter stage where not everybody's quite using it. And the second part of that, and tell me if I'm accurate with that, is when do you see this being like common practice for guys to be able to turn around estimates almost instantly or very quickly? Because the knock-on effect of that is customers will get their estimates, you know, while the person's leaving the door. And it would be very obvious that that was done by AI, and it would almost be an expectation that, you know, things are all done quickly. So how quickly do you think that that's actually going to be a reality?
Well, when we're kind of building out our AI strategy and like building AI into the product, we've been really careful to make sure that we're building it into the workflows. So you don't have to make this conscious decision that I'm going to adopt software and I'm going to start using AI. It's more like it's like a natural progression. Like, do you want to create an estimate? Sure. Do you want to upload? Like, do you want to start by uploading a document? Do you want to start from scratch, or do you want to generate it with AI? And say, if you say with AI, you give it like a detailed prompt. So you say the location, you know, high end, like a high end new build, and give the postcode and give some details. And that's how it will start. Now, that estimate's never going to be perfect. You're not going to be able to hit send on that straight away. Of course, you need to like add your own markup, review everything, make sure it's like in line with your business. But the AI will, you know, it will get smarter based on knowing how you price jobs, how you run your business. But it's as long as you're using estimating software, that should be like a natural progression. It shouldn't feel like this, you know, very like kind of committed, like, I'm going to adopt and use AI in my business now. Mm-hmm. So I think, and that's what we're really focused on, is like, how can it help? You know, if you're on a job site, or if you're with a homeowner and you log a note, like you can do voice to text note, take down all the notes of the job, and then you can convert that into an estimate. You know, these are the kind of things that they're just part of what you're doing now, but we're just making it easier. So I would say that it's not like we're just seeing early adopters. We're actually seeing the usage, the amount of AI usage within just general software usage is kind of increasing hand in hand. But that's how we want to see it. And that's where we'd like to go, you know, with houses, bringing all that in-house, that you, on your account, you can ask anything, and anything that's, you know, we've got all your project data, all your business data of like how things are moving, and then we can just help you make smarter decisions and give you more feedback. So that's kind of like
area that I have always seen contractors underperform in. That seems like a really easy, quick win. Not easy, easy, but it's definitely a quick win, is sales administration, and just the ability, just the basic things like responding to an inquiry, updating if a tender's running late, following up, even doing more than two follow-ups is just so rare. But the amount of jobs back in the day I would win just by being the company that would follow up is just crazy. Do you see, I don't know if you guys are developing anything in that region, but I've sort of seen, you know, products of automated phone calls being made and emails and things like that going out. But is there anything kind of that you guys are looking at in the pipeline that could help with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So CRM is a big aspect of our House Pro software. So you can track your leads, you can track where they are in the funnel. We've got comprehensive lead insights, so just details on how your leads are performing. And then we've just rolled out nudges recently, which is like, you know, you can do smart nudges and set the, you know, the cadence for how you want to follow up and do check-ins with homeowners. So all that's already there, and it's we're only improving upon that. Like, we want to build in more complex automation flows, so you can, you know, you can actually set up your own structure and you can automate it as much as possible. So that's coming in the pipeline. But the CRM that we have in the software is, you know, it's doing a great job already of just helping you manage that whole pipeline and make sure that you're following up and you've got good transparency on where everything is, like at what stage in the lead journey all your different prospects are.
If you were to look back at the data, particularly on the sales side, is there anything that clearly separates, you know, the high performers, the ones that are winning a lot more jobs and having success on the platform from a sales point of view, as opposed to the ones that maybe don't seem to be converting leads? Is there any practices you've seen that people could maybe replicate, or you know, cadences or follow-ups and things like that that you see a big difference in success?
I think like having a good profile with reviews is so important, and I think it's just that, you know, that validation when you've got the reviews, and then in terms of like the success of the follow-ups, I think they're always like testing and driving different optimization strategies in the CRM team to see like, how can we make our pros more successful with their leads? How can we make, you know, there's a project running at the moment to make your phone number more safe, like in case, you know, sometimes you come from like a private number or an unknown number, or might mark it as potentially spam, like introducing software there to make your number more reliable. So there's always these like extra small things that can help. But if you've already got a relationship or you've got a strong referral coming in, I think it's about just that, having your profile polished, making sure that like the communication and the documentation you're sending the customer in the early days, it's really important. I'm building my own house at the moment, and like, you know, when you get that like electrical quote sent and it's like beautifully broken down by room and you can see like everything that's included, you've got like a selections and allowances budget, it's like, oh wow, this is like so impressive. And then you've got like another trade who's saying, you know, here, I'll do this for you for 10K or what, you know, whatever.
Number at the bottom. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I guess it sets an expectation. If that's how you're going to do the quote, then that's probably how you're going to build it as well.
Exactly. And I'm like, oh, well, but, you know, I'm definitely going to go with this guy, even if it is a bit more expensive. I feel like this is going to be like a really professionally well-run job and I'm going to be updated in the process. So I think that first, you know, those first interactions, the more professional they are, the more kind of confidence you'll give the client.
So we talked, about finding a champion in your business to help with the successful implementation of software like HousePro. We've talked about starting at the beginning of the process to help with implementation. As we kind of start to wrap this up, is there any other areas that you feel, or any hints or tips you can give to those that are maybe listening to this and excited by the idea of rolling something out? Any advice that you could give?
I would say just like, you know, reach out, do a trial, give it a try, and start small, you know, and that's again like estimating our takeoffs. You know, I am a bit biased towards the takeoffs because that's where I started with my business, but you just get that aha moment so quickly when you do a digital takeoff if you haven't already been. So I think it's about, just starting small, getting a bit of your workflow into the platform, doing a good trial, and then expanding and just growing from there.
Amazing. So what is the best way that someone that is interested, I mean, we'll everybody knows, I think, house.co.uk, but is there a particular route that people can take if they wanted to test out? Is there a kind of a trial option or anything like that?
See
how that works.
Yeah, you can do a 30-day free trial. So you can, and on the free trial, I think there's, you know, you can try and get set up with a small part of your business. Of course, always reach out. There's like customer support, onboarding specialists, you know, because everybody knows that it's great to like try something yourself, but also it's great to have a helping hand. So I think there's a good balance there of like getting shown how everything works and then giving it a go yourself with your own business. But yeah, starting on the 30-day free trial is always a great way to give it a go.
Amazing. So we'll put the link in the description if somebody wanted to check you guys out. But thank you for joining us on today's call.
Yeah, brilliant. Sorry, it was great to chat.
Thank you.